This audiobook, Detecting the Scam, Nelson Mandela's Gift by Michael Friedlander, is being read by the author. That's me. For those of you who think that I have an accent, I don't. You may, but I don't. I'm dedicating this book to my Uncle Hillier, who's lately been having a little trouble seeing, so I thought I'd read it to him. Detecting the Scam, Nelson Mandela's Gift. Preface. Blame Bill Clinton. The man who can smile when things go wrong has thought of someone else he can blame it on. Robert Albert Block. High-profile scams have always fascinated me. Perhaps it was the perverse pleasure in seeing some of our finest and brightest scammed. In each case, though, something was wrong. Were the scammers really that brilliant, or was there another, more troubling explanation? Nelson Mandela has also always fascinated me. Perhaps it was because I grew up in apartheid South Africa, and I knew about the ruthlessness of those he faced. I was there. I can still marvel at his courage, extraordinary moral authority, and his remarkable negotiating skills. Looking back at the recent high-profile scams, and those who were closest to the scammers, I couldn't find a hint of anyone with the courage needed to confront the scammers. Nor could I find a trace of anyone with the negotiating skills needed to expose the looming scams. Nor could I find anyone who even pretended to have any moral authority. That was when I saw the connection between the two objects of my fascination, scams and Nelson Mandela, who had all those qualities and skills. And thus was born this book. So, why was I smiling? Things were not going well with my book. This was not nearly as easy as I'd hoped, and I knew I had to blame someone. It was obviously not my fault. It never is. Ask my wife. No, this was Bill Clinton's fault. Although we'd never met, he'd teased and tormented me into writing it, and to add insult to my profound injury, he had yet to apologize. I was conflicted. Should I forgive him? I couldn't decide. Perhaps I should explain. It had happened in the wee small hours one morning years ago, as I was channel surfing mindlessly. All was quiet and still in the kingdom. I can remember thinking about those financial talking heads that blanketed every television station. These were the same experts who had expressed such shock at the implosion of Enron, the company they had most admired and supported. I can remember them blaming it all on a diabolical and undetectable scam. I smiled at the irony. If only they had done their jobs, they would have warned us. Indeed, some had warned us, but most hadn't. Instead, many would claim they were the victims of the very scams they should have detected. I remember this left me scratching my head, but back to Bill Clinton. Midnight had long come and gone. My channel surfing was relentless. I knew I had to keep moving to escape those talking heads. On one channel, I can remember seeing some bozo wearing a cowboy hat talking excitedly about bull riding. I squeezed my remote. Another bozo replaced him. This one was wearing a baseball cap as he rode a strange contraption he claimed could clear the forest behind my ranch. Sadly, this just wasn't his day. I didn't have a ranch, let alone a forest behind it, so again, I squeezed my remote. A hatless Mr. Clinton appeared. He was pitching his new book to an openly spellbound audience, and I couldn't resist. I stopped to listen and watch, and you may wonder why. Thanks to the Bush family, I'd come to admire anyone who could string together a few coherent sentences in the English language, preferably without a teleprompter. Whatever his other frailties, President Clinton had this increasingly rare gift. Something caught my attention. I turned up the volume. When you turn 50, he was saying, take a deep breath and look back. Think about some of the more important life lessons you've learned, and just imagine, he wanted, if as a young adult you could have drawn on your parents' and grandparents' life lessons, what greater gift could they have given you? Of course, he was right, but he wasn't done. Think back on those years, he continued, and write down those lessons. Offer them to your kids. And who knows, maybe, just maybe, they might even read them. This intrigued me, and my favorite Oscar Wilde quote immediately came to mind. When I was a boy of 14, he wrote, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years. Well, I'd already turned 50, and maybe I could show them how much I'd learned. As I thought about the lessons I might pass on to my kids, I again thought about the recent high-profile scams. I wondered about the remarkable lack of curiosity of some of our very finest and brightest, and their lack of any moral authority. I thought about the questions they hadn't asked. This made me think back to Nelson Mandela. In 1918, he was born in a village in the Transkei in South Africa. His parents were illiterate. They lived in a mud hut with no electricity, plumbing, paved roads, or other modern amenities. Yet their son grew up with remarkable values and a driving sense of curiosity that was so lacking in some of our finest and brightest. As he later became a lawyer, he became a leader with unequaled moral authority and unparalleled negotiating skills. I couldn't help but wonder how his qualities and skills and moral authority might have saved us from the recent high-profile scams. It was then that my earlier smile turned into a broad grin. I remembered thinking about how our self-delusion had aided the scammers. I remembered how I had stumbled upon an unlikely connection between Enron and Nelson Mandela. Much to my delight, I discovered that Enron had actually awarded him its highest prize for the very qualities it didn't have. My next discovery only added to my delight. Only a few months earlier, Harvard University had honored him for the very qualities it had failed to teach some of Enron's top executives. I was on a roll. I then discovered that George W. Bush had awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom for his statesmanship at the very time the president was widely ridiculed for his own diplomatic efforts prior to the Iraq War. And finally, not even Mr. Clinton was spared. When he awarded Mr. Mandela the Congressional Gold Medal, he recognized Mr. Mandela's enormous moral authority. This was at a time Mr. Clinton was embroiled in the Monica Lewinsky scandal. I couldn't possibly have made any of this up. Self-delusion was clearly alive and well and living in the United States, and if the scammers were smiling, you had to forgive them. So I made my decision, albeit with a twist. If Bill Clinton wanted life lessons, they wouldn't be mine. Instead, I'd first drawn Nelson Mandela's life lessons. I'd see how he developed and used his formidable skills. Then I'd explore briefly three recent high-profile scams to test those lessons and to answer a few troubling questions. And I'd tie this all together by exploring Hans Christian Andersen's classic children's tale, The Emperor's New Clothes, and by showing the connection between the tale and the Enron, Ahmed Chalabi, and Bernard Madoff adventures. Finally, I do this knowing that not all scams were detectable, but also knowing that we'd at least have a better shot at detecting and avoiding them if we made good use of Nelson Mandela's gift. And thus was born this book, Blame Bill Clinton, Who Will Never Know About the Anxiety and Self-Doubt He Would Cause Me That Night.